For those who care to, would you please help me open the meeting in the usual manner? Firstly, we ask for a moment's silence, perhaps to remember those over the past 70 years who have come before us, and for those who are still yet to come, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Would you please stand? The Serenity Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
My name is Jim Zaparanyak, and I'm an alcoholic. It's a real privilege and a real opportunity to chair this afternoon's meeting on freedom to choose, and I just met your three speakers just in the last little while, and I know you're going to enjoy them. My home group is We Do the Steps Group in Prince Albert, Saskatchewan, Canada, and my sobriety date is May 24th of 84, and for that I better be grateful. Our meeting this afternoon is basically called Freedom to Choose. I'm sure that our speakers will perhaps tell a little bit about themselves, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. On page 38 of the Daily Reflections, it says, freedom to choose sobriety for today, freedom to be myself, freedom to express my opinion, to experience peace of mind, to love and be loved, and freedom to grow spiritually. And that's been my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. Our first speaker this afternoon is a lady I just met this afternoon. She's from Kingston, Ontario. And I'd like you to introduce Anne Kay.
Good afternoon, friends. I am an alcoholic. My name is Anne. I'm a grateful member of the Tuesday Night Fortnight group, Kingston, Ontario, and my dry date is the 6th of January, 1994. It's wonderful to look out here and see so many friends that I know, friends that I have yet to meet. It's truly a privilege and an honor to stand to you, and I am standing. Half an hour ago, I didn't think I'd be standing, but I'm here and I'm standing. I was taught to suit up and show up, and that's what I try and do in Alcoholics Anonymous. Here's me a little bit in the big book to tell you what it was like for me, what happened, and what it's like today. And the topic, of course, is freedom to choose. I never knew I had choices till I came through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. But when I was little, I did have choices. When I look back on my childhood, I can remember the first conscious choice I ever made towards alcohol was when I used to visit my mum's side of the family. She was from a family of 13, Irish. Half of them are in this program today, and the other have died through the disease of alcoholism. Actually, my granny was 76 when she joined Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah. She died sober, she just slipped in nicely, you know. We all have our past, you know, some are short and some are long. Mine was quite long. Anyway, when I would visit my mum's side of the family, there was always this wonderful feeling of friendliness and bagpipes going and everybody singing and hugging and everybody drinking. And I was drawn to that. And I remember consciously saying, I must have been maybe 6 or 7 years old, when I grow up, I'm going to be just like my mum's side of the family because my dad's side of the family is boring. And I remember that, you know. What it was, my dad's side of the family were hard-working people. They had principles and they had values, and they didn't appeal to me. The drinking side appealed to me. I think I was a very spiritual little girl, as I remember. I was brought up Catholic. I loved church. I loved all the trappings of the church and all the mysticism. I loved going to church. I used to go on a daily basis, and I would have little altars. And the second choice I made in life was one that was to drive me straight into alcoholism, I believe, today. I was about 10 years old, And I had this little altar going, and I was praying desperately that the mother that had left me would come back and take me away from all this. 10 years old, take me away from all this. I mean, I had a good life. But my perception, this was my perception. And I remember my mum came back for a holiday and didn't take me with her. And I remember closing the door. I remember closing the door in my higher power at that time and gently walking away. No anger, no resentment, just sadly closing the door. And I think from that day, about 10 years old, I became the centre of the universe. I was all powerful. I was going to do life and I didn't need anybody. And the next thing I remember thinking of the disease and the choices was I was about 17 years old. And I remember starting to drink and people saying, have another drink. And I remember saying, no, I don't want another drink. I chose not to have another drink. I mean, that blows my mind today. But I did choose not to have another drink. And that was a conscious choice. But I had the feeling even then that the booze would do something to me. I didn't quite know what. So I was well on my way at 17 into this disease. I married and came to Canada to live. We had 3 children. There was no alcohol between us at that time. Just parties, things like that. I worked with Dad at that time in 1967, and I found I had to go to work. And being the perfectionist of the alcoholic, it wasn't my journey to go to work in life, I thought. My journey was to stay home, bake cookies, and take care of the kids. However, out to work I went, had the poor knees and the whole bit. And it was while I was working that I got that first resentment that we talk about in the big book. I had to go to work, poor me, you know. And about a month later, I remember I was working in a restaurant and the girls asked me to go for a drink. And then I said those words that I'll never forget, I deserve a drink. And for 30 years after that, I deserved a drink. It didn't matter what was happening with the children, my husband, the family, it was all about me. It wasn't about anybody else in the world. And when I look back on my past, it's kind of mind-blowing. It's almost like I was in another planet. Just like I felt like half an hour ago, I was in another planet, you know. And my perception has shifted, for the grace of God. Truly it has shifted. My disease progressed. Coming back in powerful, it took a while. It took a while, but gradually I became like the Jekyll and Hyde that we talk about in the big book. My values were torn every which way. What was left of them, I was just hanging on to be my fingernails. The rest of me wanted to be the party girl. I wanted to give up my responsibilities. I wanted to enjoy myself. And it truly was all about me. So I proceeded to try and have a life that incorporated all of this. And of course, you've only got 24 hours a day, as you keep telling me in these rooms, you know. And in 24 hours, you can't do the things that this perfectionist tried to do. So I settled for the booze. And I quietly slipped right into my alcoholism. I became my daily drinker. And that was how I progressed. I never physically abused my children, but mentally and emotionally, I did a fair job. But I've got a lifetime to make things like that up, and I do try to be. Finally, my husband took off with another man. He was a member of my family. No proud of that today. Didn't think there was anything wrong with it back then. I deserved it. And I surely deserved this man. I thought he was my knight in shining armour. I thought we had it by the tail. And what we had was, we both drank the same. Whatever we did, wherever we went, we had the bottle between us. Gradually, alcoholism got deeper and deeper, and I got into it deeper and deeper. And he said to me one night, don't you think you're drinking too much? And I had choices that night, and he lost the power he had over me, because he was interfering in my booze. He fell off that white horse, and I fell out of love just like that. Because, you see, the true love was my bottle by this time. Nothing and nobody came before my addiction. I started hiding the booze then, like we didn't have enough of it around. But I started hiding it so I could refill the bottles. I took off, drove drunk all over the place. I did all the things that I never thought I would do. I had no morals left. I didn't know that. I thought I was doing things my way. You know that Frank Sinatra song? I used to sing that, I'm doing it my way. Oh boy, was that ever. One night I came to and this man had a knife at my throat. I had been throwing abuse at him about his mum. And I had that moment of clarity that we all talk about, and I had a choice. It was either to get out of there or I was going to die. Because I was the one that was taking the black out. He seemed to be able to keep it all together more. And I would come to and I would be bruised and I would be all kinds of stuff. Some of it was self-inflicted. I was getting to that stage of the disease where the self-hatred was setting in. I was starting to smack myself and my legs and my arms would be all black and blue. I had bought a small business at the time, and I really still didn't think there was anything wrong with me. I would phone the children at 2 o'clock in the morning, and wonder if I'd get upset. And I had that telephonitis. But towards the end of my drinking, I was terrified of the telephone. I wouldn't go near it. I had the isolation, the denial was set in, my walls were high, my choices were gone. There was no more choices left for me. I still didn't know that. I thought, I don't need anybody, I don't need anything. I've got my booze, I've got my cigarettes, and when I go, they'll go with me. And I thought that was quite an okay thing. So I finally got out of this relationship with this gentleman, and if I hadn't got out of it, he would have thrown me out, because I was quite a mess. But this time, I never washed, I never cleaned myself, I'd get up and try and run this business. I had 4 or 5 people working for me. And I think every day they wondered if it was the last day. 4 o'clock was my drinking time. Nothing and nobody came before I drank at 4 o'clock. So at one time my consumption would be 40 ounces a day. I was down to a misty. That was about all I could consume. I wasn't eating. I was down to about 100 pounds. And I was still fighting. I wasn't surrendering. And I was finally left alone. I got this little apartment and bottle of rum that night, and I had a little cockatiel bug, and I sat and I said, I'm going to be all right now. I've got rid of everybody. I can drink how I choose. I can live my life how I choose. I had no life left. I was hiding behind the curtains at night. Hands on like that, this is the last year of my drinking, with the grace of God, one day at a time. And I came to one morning, it was about 4 o'clock, my eyes were popping out my head along with my tongue and everything else was popping out all over. And for no reason I had that moment, you know. And for the first time in 30 years I said, please help me, I can't do this anymore. And for me it was instant. The power was there for me instantly. I had never asked for help, never. Even when I was in all kinds of jackpots, we might have should have asked for help. I never did. But somewhere, somehow, I thought, just maybe. And it was survival that drove me there. It wasn't survival of the spirit. My spirit was gone. It was the physical. I knew I was dying physically. And as soon as I said those words, there was a peace came over me. An uneasy peace, but nevertheless a peace. And a couple hours later, that little voice that we all have inside, that little still voice, which I believe is our power, said, pick up the phone, Anne. I hadn't picked up a phone in over a year, and that was the first choice I made towards a better life. The first choice for freedom, because it was freely made, and I picked up that phone, and I phoned a lady who I had gone to. I'd ended up in a psych ward. I'd forgotten all that stuff. Can you say it all here, but she belonged to Options for Change, and she tried to help me. And she was the first woman that I had met who was an alcoholic in recovery. She was the first alcoholic who gave me a hug. And it was a hug with all the strength and the power of alcoholics behind it. And the seed was planted for me. So when I picked up that phone, I said, so do you remember me? It had been about 2 years. She says, of course I remember you. And my walls came down, not one at a time. All the bricks fell and I cried like a baby. And I said, somebody remembers me as a snake in the grass. That's how I felt. And it was okay. It was okay. She says, can you get to the detox?
The detox, you know, I'm not going to need detox. The ego was rising. It was the first for long. So, anyway, she says, can you make it to me? And so I did. And that night I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and for me, I was home. I looked in the eyes around me, and I knew the answers were there for me. I knew you were going to fix me. I had no idea how you were going to fix me, but I thought that whole room full of people was there to fix me. It was all about me. And so far, you are doing no bad job. One day at a time. So, that meeting I went into, my sponsors who's here today trying to keep me honest was there. And the friend that gave me that first hug was there. So I'm truly blessed. And in that first meeting, it was a big group meeting, I knew I was on my way. I knew all I had to do was listen to what you say. For some reason, I was given the grace of God, I was teachable, I was willing, and I was open-minded. And I was trying to be honest. I was desperate. I was full of fear. But I had the three components that was going to get me sober if I did what you told me. And I just kept nodding, you know, the AA nods. It didn't matter what you said, I nodded. It took me about 2 months to figure out what those slogans in the wall meant. I used to drive up and down the road the wrong way. I was worse sober than I was drunk, but I was making choices. Some of them weren't good, but some of them were no too bad. I got a sponsor. He said, choose a sponsor that you want to be what she's like. And just to show you where I was at, she had a ponytail, and I always wanted a ponytail, so I got a sponsor with a ponytail. But what she did for me, she took me in, she took me home for supper, she took me to conferences, she toted me around just like a child, and that's what I needed. I could not stand in my own 2 feet, I had to be taught. I was just like a baby again. But I was like a sponge that first year. I truly was. I read everything you had to show me on AA. Except that one book, I forget what you call it. The big book. And one day my sponsor said, are you going to pick up that big book or not? And I'd read all the history and I could tell you all about Akon and everything about it. But I couldn't tell you about the big book. I was terrified of that big book. I was afraid, totally full of fear. I opened that big book. I had it under my pillow for 3 months. I finally opened it up, and I opened it up at the doctor's opinion. And for the first time, I started to feel the shame, that horrible shame that had been at the pit of my stomach since I was a wee lassie, started to lift. And I knew, and I believed that I had a disease. I had a disease of alcoholism. It was me or my fault. And that was a wonderful feeling. It truly, truly was. So I could build on that. I could build on that feeling that I had a disease. I wasn't a bad person. I was a sick person. And that's what I've tried to build on in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you just helped me so much. I didn't know where to start with that. So that was how it went for me. I started working on the steps. And for me, the steps are the answer. I have an inner freedom today through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous on a daily basis. I truly believe I've only got a reprieve for 124 hours. And what I do in that 24 hours and how I work on myself and give back is how I'm going to be tomorrow. A few minutes. Wow! I just like to mention that I'd like to thank one of my sponsors. Last night I was in that awful tizzy, you know, where you suddenly feel you're not good enough, why am I here? And that lassie sat with me for an hour trying to make 2 cabs so that I could see straight today. And it's not that the 2 cabs were so important, they were at the time, but they're in my bag now. But just the fact, and this is the whole basis for me, one alcoholic sharing with another, that's what it's all about. I mean, this is fantastic. The eyes of the alcoholic, the shining eyes out there is such a treat. But one-on-one is what it is for me. And it doesn't matter what we do together as long as we try and heal the pain in each other. So many thank you for last night. I just like to close with a prayer that for me brings me closer to that higher power every day. It sets me on my feet and it gives me that inner freedom. And I go on my knees every morning and I say that third step prayer. I offer myself to thee, build with me, do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may be a witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. And when I got off my knees and I've said that prayer, and I've tried to really mean it, I know that I won't drink today. I know that I have the power of my higher power to root and help another alcoholic. I guess that's about all I've got to say. I'd like to wish each and every one of you another 24 hours. God bless.
Thank you very much, Anne. It was a great sharing of your experience, strength, and hope. For those of you who are from outside of the country of Canada, that is not your typical Canadian accent. Just thought I'd throw that in. Our next speaker is another gentleman that I just met this afternoon. In fact, I do know the gentleman that he tells me was responsible for getting him into Alcoholics Anonymous. Would you please welcome Ryle C. from Landover Hills, Maryland. Hi, my name's Ryle, I'm an alcoholic. And it's in Area 13, District 43, the Little House Group. We meet in Cheverly, Maryland. On Mondays for open discussion and Fridays for steps or traditions. And if you happen to come down while we're on a tradition meeting, don't leave. We have some real good tradition meetings. And like Craig Jim, a guy who's talking about was Arnold R. from Baltimore. Arnold wasn't responsible for me getting an Alcoholics Anonymous. Me drinking too much liquor is responsible for me getting an Alcoholics Anonymous. But Arnold, along with one of our past delegates in Area 13, they like to volunteer me for stuff. And about 5 years ago, Doug R., who chairs the conventions and meetings and so forth for our General Service Office, was at our General Service Assembly, and I saw Arnold and John pointing in my direction. And the guy come over and says, you know, would you like to participate in the International Convention? And I said, when? He said, 2005. I'm like, oh, yeah, no problem, you know. And I'd forgotten all about it. And then I got this package in the mail. You're expected to be here. They say this is what you got to do, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, my goodness, I did tell that guy I would come up there. So, but, you know, the topic is freedom to choose. And I found a free coffee, Julius. I chose not to buy a coffee while I was at an AA event. The free coffee was in the hospitality rooms, and that's why I went and got me a cup of coffee. I have that choice today. But while I was thinking about what I would say while I was here, I kept almost drawing a blank. My mind kept going back to what the Big Book says about us being people who have lost the power of choice of a drink. So I'm like, okay, that's not going to take 20 minutes. And I talked to some folks in my home group, and the sponsor kind of messed with me today. Make sure you got something worthwhile to say for 20 minutes while you're up there. And, okay. And Ann and I were talking beforehand, and she was telling me about the cue cards, and I'm like, well, you know, I don't have no idea what I'm going to say. Just say a prayer and let God work through us. And she said, yeah, these cue cards weren't making any sense to me either, right? And she left them there, and I think you did a great job, Ann. I remember early on that I was told, again by my sponsor, that as long as I talk about me, I can't go too far off base. That's a hell of a lie. But talking about me is easy because I know me, except for a few years. I don't remember the Reagan presidency too well. I was in a blackout most of the time. So I'd like to share out of the Big Book a little bit what it was that my mind kept going back to. And there was a solution on page 24 It says, the fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without a defense against the first drink. And a little further on, in more about alcoholism on page 34, it talks about that no choice thing again. And it says for those who are unable to drink moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. We are assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop. Whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power of choice, the power to choose whether he will drink or not. So I don't have any power as far as choosing whether to take a drink or not, and I guess that's why they had that thing about powerlessness in the first step. If I had some power over drink, then I wouldn't be in Toronto today, I tell you that. Now, what happened to me prior to getting to Alcoholics Anonymous was that I drank a lot and I poured some other things on top of that, and I lived a very shoddy life. I basically was homeless before it was fashionable to be homeless, and I was okay with that. All the people around me, she owned the business and was just like me, not bathing and eating and, you know, just drinking. And so no, it matters what your accent is, Jim, or what country you're from, or what your station in life is, if alcohol has you, and it pretty much does the same thing to all of us, just in varying degrees. And it did a number on me. Now, what had happened was I hit my bottom, and my bottom was realizing one day that I was living contrary to the way I was raised. Wasn't the fact that I'd been living in the streets and, you know, all these other things. That didn't mean anything to me. But it just dawned on me that my mother, you know, she didn't bring me up like this. And I was raised primarily by my mother, but my father, who passed in November of last year, he was always in my life, and he was always a very positive person. He always told me, be the best at whatever I was going to do. If I'm going to be a street cleaner, make sure my streets were the cleanest in town. He told me, if you're going to go to school, get a job. And if you're going to drink, buy your own. And I guess if I had listened to my first two sponsors, my mother and father, I wouldn't be here today either. But I didn't. And what I did was, I remember from watching old movies and how the drunks would throw a brick through the glass window and sit and wait on the police to come in the wintertime so they can get three hots in a cot. And I got the bright idea. I know what to do. So I committed a crime, and I called a cousin of mine who's a Prince George's County police officer, and, crazy, but I ain't stupid, you know. Not going to let just any police officer get me, because some of them don't have a very good disposition towards people who look and smell the way I looked and smelled back then. But I called my cousin, told him what happened, and he didn't believe me. He checked it out. He said, well, man, the perp got away. Just don't do it anymore. And I said, man, come get me. And then he was, you know, his concern was, what was he going to tell our grandmother? And I said, well, you tell grandma you did your job. When I got in his squad car, I said, woo, roll the window down, man. And he asked me, why did I do what I did? And I said, man, I couldn't keep living the way I was living. I needed some help. And he looked at me and he said, Ryan, why didn't you just ask for some help? Never thought about that. Now, as I said, my sobriety date's October 18th of 1991, but in 1987, I had gotten into trouble with the law and was told that I had a choice, go to jail or go to AA. People say, well, I was sentenced to AA. No, you're not sentenced to AA. You have a choice. You can go to jail. And in 1987, I didn't want to go to jail. And I didn't know what AA was about, but it sounded better than jail. So I went to these AA meetings, and I'm like, I don't understand these people telling their business, talking about some steps, and if God didn't want me to drink, then I wouldn't make liquor, and you know, drinking is not really, you know, it's legal, blah, blah, blah. But needless to say, due to the progressive nature of our illness, 4 years later, I was ready, willing, and fighting to go to jail. Because liquor just had taken its toll on me, but I didn't know it. when I got out of jail, I went into this rehab because that was one of the conditions of my release. I had to get a fixed address because I was NFA for no fixed address. I had to get a job and I had to get some kind of treatment. And I was pissed when the judge gave me 5 years and suspended all of it but 6 months because I just really wanted to be put away somewhere. But in any event, I went into this rehab and one of their conditions, everybody has these conditions, one of their conditions was that you go to meetings outside of Philly. I'm lazy, and at that time, the Little House Group was the closest meeting to the facility, so that's how I ended up in AA. I was a guy coming back from an AA meeting, talking to other guys in the rehab, but I'm asked a darn shame that I can't drink a cold beer, because I'm not in here for alcohol. And I guess I could have drank a beer, but it was October when I went in, winter was coming, and I hear they're kind of harsh here, but they're not that great in the Washington, D.C. area either, if you're not inside. And they give you a breathalyzer anytime you leave the premises. So, you know, I said, I'm crazy, I'm not stupid. But this guy told me, he said, man, the fact that you're complaining, actually upset that you can't drink a beer on your way from an AA meeting to the rehab, that doesn't tell you something? And I told him that I wasn't in here for alcohol, and he didn't know what he was talking about. I said, if you know so much, then you wouldn't be in this rehab with me. That's the same thing to tell the guys in jail, the jailhouse lawyers. Well, man, if you know so much, why are you here? But in any event, at that meeting, I met some folks who kind of adhered to AA's tradition and their singleness of purpose and talking about recovery from alcoholism, and it allowed a guy like me, who didn't think he was an alcoholic, to catch alcoholism. The folks at my home group saved my life by talking about their recovery from alcoholism. And me, a guy who didn't think I drank a whole lot, I didn't know where an alcoholic was, so of course I couldn't be one. But I found out that, yes, I am one of you too, and it scared the devil out of me. One of the things that see, the other things are kind of easy to leave alone. They're illegal. They, you know, didn't have set hours. You can go get it. But alcohol was legal. It was plentiful. And I loved it. And the fact that now I got this disease, and that's what really was causing all of my problems, that's what scared me. Because I knew I couldn't stop drinking. My grandmother, I'd go get a six-pack of beer. And my grandmother said, wow, six beers are for 6 days. And I'm like, Grandma, you don't understand. That's just... It's in me to drink. I think the ism was already there, and I poured liquor on it, and I flourished. And flourishing for a practicing alcoholic is going down. In any event, though, I've been coming to these meetings, and I started showing up early to help guys set up the chairs and things that we were smoking back then, and ashtrays and whatnot, and... And I was hearing you guys talk about sponsorship, and I'm like, I don't need no man tell me how to live my life. I'm a grown man. I know how to live my life. Sure I do. I just got out of jail, and I was in rehab, and was glad to have some place to go to put up some chairs and make coffee. But, yeah, I knew how to live my life. But I asked this guy. The first guy I asked to be my sponsor, this guy, he real big guy, and he looked real mean, gentle as a teddy bear. And the reason I asked him to be my sponsor was because of his appearance. I said, he ain't gonna take no stuff off of me. But this guy was working a full-time job and part-time job. He had wife and kids, and needless to say, he didn't have a lot of time. And I guess that's why he called us pigeons, because, you know, we follow you around and crap all over the place. But newcomers need some attention, you know, like babies. And I started complaining. Man, I call this guy. I don't care if I tell him I broke my leg. All he'll say is, don't take a drink. Keep coming back. Learn to listen. Listen to learn. Man, I was in a car accident. Keep coming back. Don't take a drink. Learn to listen. Listen to learn. And that was when I could get him on the phone. And we would talk at meetings. But at that point, as I said, I was scared. And I wanted some help. I knew I needed some help. And I talked to another member of the home group, and I was complaining, and this young lady, she said, well, you know, your recovery is your responsibility, and it's up to you to get somebody that you feel that can help you. And there was this other guy that I always noticed when he wasn't sleeping in the meeting, he was smiling. And when I heard him share, he always shared about what he did or what he, basically he shared about his experience of what the book said. I never heard him talk about his opinion on stuff. And I kind of like that. And I was talking to him one day, and he said something, and I said, man, you're kind of arrogant, ain't you? He's like, you ain't supposed to say that. And I said, yeah, well, I am too. And, you know, I take one to know one. But I'd asked him to be my sponsor. I got that nerve finally to do that. And he looked at me and said he only sponsored people who are serious about the program. My first resentment in AA. Now, I'm already coming to these meetings. I'm showing up early. I'm helping set up. And now I finally got up the nerve to exercise my power of choice to get some help to ask this guy to help me. And he hands me this stuff. I know what he means now, though. But he gave me this book. It's not an AA book. It has nothing to do with drinking or anything like that. But he gave me this book. It was about maybe 40 pages in big print. I guess, you know, couldn't handle too much at that time. He told me to read that book and tell him about it the next meeting. So it was like on a Friday and then that Monday. And in a nutshell, that book talked about the greatest miracle on earth was to be reborn from a living death. And that's the book was talking about in the spiritual manner. And as we all know, that we don't not only die spiritually, but we were dying physically as well. And I told him about that, and then he said that we are going to go through these steps your first year, and then I'm going to let you go. Well, Ken, is almost 14 years later, and you ain't got rid of me yet. But the way he said it was something that kind of struck me. He said, we are going to go through these steps your first year. And so I had a choice, you know. First thing that went through my mind was how I heard people say, well, you work a step a year, or I've been here 3 years, and I'm on the first three steps, I've been here 10 years, and blah, 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 blah. And I'm lazy, remember I told you that. So I like that other stuff I was hearing more than this stuff in a year, you know. It's kind of crazy. But I kind of was scared to go back to living the life I was living. So, you know, did what he said do. At that time, my sponsor was a intergroup representative, and he would take me to the intergroup meetings. And my thing, man, where can I get my slip signed at? And he was like, don't worry about that tonight. Put these chairs up. And he showed me, pointed this lady, said, go help her. And whenever you see her, go help her. And I would see this lady at other meetings, and I say, well, you know, I go help her. I said, why are you always following me around? I said, my sponsor told me whenever I see you to go help you. And her and I are good friends today, and whenever I see her, I help her. I found out after about 6 months in here that I didn't have to do what this guy was telling me to do. I didn't realize that. However, I realized that nothing that he had asked of me had caused me any harm. In fact, I was better off inside, because I'm still in the rehab and so forth, so my outsides hadn't changed that much, but I was better off inside. My relations with my family were improving. My relationship with that guy in the mirror was improving. And I remember doing, when he told me to do the fourth step, we did the third step together, saying the prayer, and I was talking about this fear thing, and he said, well, you were there when it happened, so what do you have to be scared of? That made it easy for me to do the fourth step. Because you're right, I was there. The other thing he did, my first fifth step, I didn't do with my sponsor, because I trust none of y'all. I did it with the girlfriend I had at that time. And you know kind of how that turned out. But the next one I did do with my sponsor, and I was like, well, what if, you know, I hadn't finished? Because he gave me a date, told me when I'm starting the fourth step, he told me when we were going to do the fifth step. And I'm like, well, what if I don't have anything on there but my name and the date? And he said, we'll talk about why you're so lazy. But what I found was that helped me. It gave me a goal to have some focus, because I've heard people talk about it taking them years to do a fourth step, and I'm not trying to say do or don't do anyway. I'm only here to share with you my experience and what worked for me. And having that time limit, I was also told, he said, man, this first thing here, you can write this on the cover of a matchbook, because we need to deal with those things that are bothering you the most right now. Because, it's an ongoing process. The 10-step tells us that we continue the inventory process. We do the daily inventory and the semi-annual, annual inventory, and the spot check inventory. I call it the gut check inventory. So in any event, these things that were presented to me were choices that I had to make. As the book said, and as my story says, I had long since lost the freedom of choice over drink. But what I did have, now that I had the sobriety or dry, undrunk, I had the opportunity to make some sober choices because now I had responsibility for my sobriety. And that's a very big responsibility. It's the most important responsibility in my life today, is for me to make sure that I do the things that I have to do to stay sober today. And following these suggestions and doing whatever it is asking me to do in AA, those are the choices I exercise today. There are a lot of other things that have happened and will happen, but the main thing is I don't want to drink today. I'm powerless over alcohol today, and I have no choice as to whether I'll drink today, so I need to continue to pay my insurance against taking a drink today. And thank you all.
My name is Kevin. I'm an alcoholic. One of the first things I noticed up here in Canada is there's not a lot of Canadians up here, eh? My sobriety date is May 18th of 1989. My home group is the Sleepy Hollow group of Stillwater, Oklahoma. I'm extremely grateful to be here. It's an honor and privilege. And, something I've noticed that throughout the couple of days that I've been here is that we, members of Alcoholics Anonymous, definitely have something. And there's no doubt about that. We have allowed a power greater than ourselves to do for us what we could not do for ourselves. And that's just amazing. That lets me know that this thing, just being here at this conference, just brings me back moment for moment of what this is all about, that God does for me what I cannot do myself. That, like he, Rydell talks about being reborn, that has happened. And I can identify with all the speakers and everybody here. I can identify about being homeless and drinking. And I spent a couple weeks up in D.C. drunk, just flopping out, drunk around the clock. But about that identification, on my way up here, it's kind of a funny story. I've been, people try to figure out who I am, And they're wrong. On the airplane up, they asked me if I was a minister, an older couple from New Jersey. Well, see, I was pretty much a transient alcoholic. I had a truck and I could drive from place to place and drink and lose it and then find it, and that went on. But so I was mistaken as a minister, and at this conference being. I am responsible in the topic being freedom of choice. I chose to tell them that no, I was not a minister. I didn't tell them, I was going to an AA conference, but I wasn't a minister. Then later I was mistaken. I come upon a group of Japanese alcoholics, Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was just amazing. There's about 30 of them there. And I walked up and I started shaking a couple of their hands, and they kind of kept moving, those two. And the whole group enveloped me, and all of them shook my hand, and then were doing a little nod and bowing, and I started doing a little nod and bowing, and they went on through, and then someone came up to me and asked me, said, "Are you a translator?" And I said, no, I'm not a translator. Yeah. But I was identified this morning at 5:45. I had left the hotel at the Sheraton about 5:30, and I started on my walk, and I've got my books, which I didn't bring with me to the podium that I need, but so I started my walk with my books. I was going to read and meditate and watch the sun come up and see this big lake down to the south of the Sheraton. Well, this red car pulls up next to me, and it's a real nice car, and there's this transvestite in there. Thank you very much, Jim. And this transvestite knew what I was, that I was somebody for the International Conference. And this conversation went on how I think of Toronto, what it's like, if it's nice, people are great. And then they asked me if I was horny. And then I said, and this is 5:30 in the morning, or no, 5:45. And I told this person that I'm a heterosexual from Oklahoma, and I'm going to go on down the road. But I didn't choose to be honest with that person, because I was horny. I was. Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, talks about sexual drives and says some people have a salt diet and some would say we have strictly a pepper diet. Well, my diet's just not that spicy. But I'll tell you what, something I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous and the truth, you know, the fundamental core truth that are again and again is, you know, I don't mean to make fun of this person. I'm not making fun of this person. This person is another child of God. I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. First, I've learned that we're all equal children under a God in Alcoholics Anonymous in this room. And then I can take it out there. This individual is a person who is a child of God. God loves as much as me. We were doing the same thing this morning. You know, I can identify with that person. I woke up that morning and I needed something in my life. That person woke up this morning and needed something in their life. And it was his hunger was just as much as mine. I don't choose what the individual was looking for. You know, a sex. I was choosing to take my books. I'm kind of a solemn person. I look at things, I see things, and I identify. I get this conscious contact a little bit with a power greater than myself, God. So I'm really grateful to be here. And and some things like the overall theme of this conference. I am responsible. That's a nice. And the theme of this meeting, freedom to choose. Well, you know, I can say I'm here because I am responsible because I got a letter in the mail. Or we could think about what all the 12 steps are about. What does all the 12 steps have in common? They're ego deflating. Maybe I'm here because of my ego. Because I spent a lot of money to get here from Stillwater, Oklahoma, and I'm staying, you know, I don't stay at hotels, and I don't shop downtown and buy all these drinks that I've been drinking, you know, grabbing all these coffees and waters and throwing money around. So, you know, I might be a little bit here because of ego more than I am responsible, but I am responsible to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the freedom to choose. I honestly believe, you know, that we read how it works, A, B, C, at the end of how it works, you know, that when it comes to alcoholism, I have no choice. And whether or not there was a time when I had choice to drink alcohol, that's something. I have no choice to drink alcohol today. The only choice I have is to pick up the spiritual tool, kit of spiritual tools that's laid at my feet. And I'm grateful for that. And I'd just like to read, I'll read out of Daily Reflections on page 16 that talks about that. And it says, on page 16, do I have a choice? The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscured, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. Alcoholics Anonymous, page 24. My powerlessness over alcohol does not cease when I quit drinking. In sobriety, I still have no choice. I cannot drink. The choice I do have is to pick up and use a kit of spiritual tools. Alcoholics Anonymous, page 25. When I do that, my higher power leads me of the lack of choice and keeps me sober one more day. If I choose not to pick up a drink today, where would my need for AA or a higher power be? And Ryle spoke of that, you know. Why would I be here in Toronto if I could just quit drinking? I read and I studied and I cross-referenced, and AA has a lot of literature that makes it easy to cross-reference. You know, you can look up in the back of here, Freedom and the Daily Reflection. You can look up Choice, and you just keep reading. And another one I like is Language of the Heart, you know, because it even takes you a little bit further into stuff that takes it to the idea of the concepts, you know, and cross-reference it. And we read about it, you know, and Tradition 11, you know, who's the guardian of AA's tradition? Well, each individual member is a guardian, active guardian of our traditions. Well, why is that? Because it's spiritual truths that if we don't live by them, there's an alternative to that. We'll drink and die, and I know that to be true. I'll either, you know, and Alcoholics Anonymous isn't, you know, the only way to get sober. It's the way that I got sober and the way it's presented to me. And so I try to carry that message. And before I get to going too far, I'm just really grateful. And the power of choice, it talks about, you know, we have the right to choose because we want to avoid the pains of not doing so at first. You know, and the idea is, you know, like your sponsor asked a question when I first got in the program. He said, have you ate today, you know? And I say, well, yeah, I've ate today. And I hadn't, you know. But he's asking me questions, you know. The reason he's asking these questions was to, you know, just to see if I take care of those responsibilities of a sponsor, you know. It's not the group's responsibility to take care of the individual. You know, it talks about it in the service journal, that it's the sponsor, you know, that maybe gets the newcomer a place to sleep. You know, maybe Tuesday he has a suit for his interview. So he was just doing those things, and I had that ego that couldn't say, well, no, I haven't eaten today, you know. But while I'm here about this talk about the sponsor, I'm extremely grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous. Without doubt, give me a life that I had no life. I had no existence. The only concept of hell that I could possibly have, I was living it day in and day out, day in and day out. And it was miserable. And came into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I asked a gentleman to be my sponsor, and I could talk and tell stories about that, about how I was mad when he said, well, come by my office. You know, instead of saying, well, yeah, I want you to be my sponsor, you know, because, you know, just, he didn't just immediately say he wanted to be my sponsor. He said, come by. He talked. And I could say how I got angry at him after I did my fifth step, because he put his hand out, and he shook my hand and said, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. When he's doing what it exactly says in the big book about step five, it says, we now become a part of the fellowship. He's literally doing what it says to do, welcoming. I was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous when I said I was. I became a part of the fellowship after I did my fifth step. And it says I draw closer to man and God after that fifth step. Well, going back to ego and that sort of thing, it's the oddest thing happened. In October, I got to do the meetings in Stillwater, Oklahoma for speakers. That's every Thursday. Well, I go and I get people from around the state of Oklahoma to speak. And then the last Thursday, I'm going to have my sponsor speak. And that's Max C., who is my sponsor for 16 years, that I've gone to every Northwest District Conference in the state of Oklahoma with for the last 16 years, and every state conference. And, you know, I owe my life and my sobriety to God and you people in this room, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that man, you know, that man individually. Well, I like to do that thing, and so I was already at that meeting. I had my suit on, and I was behind the podium, and he wasn't in the audience yet, and I was going to say those nice, kind words and take a few jabs at my sponsor, and his boy walked in, and so I walked to the back, and I thought he was going to tell me that Mac's son, Newt, had died. The strange thing about Alcoholics Anonymous, Mac is my sponsor. His son was in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous when I came in. He had since slipped, Newt, and Newt had asked me to be a sponsor, and I really thought he was going to tell me that Newt had died. Well, I go back to the back of the room. He tells me Mac, my sponsor, and his wife had died in a plane crash coming back from Tunica, coming back to AA, back to Stillwater to speak at the meeting. And it's hard to, I'm sure everybody, I would hope that everybody has the relationship with their sponsor that I had. Because I had the sponsor, I had the deal, I was doing the deal, you know, And one thing about that is, well, you'd have to know Mac, but that's definitely the way he'd want to go. He loved to gamble, you know, and gambling and flying back to his home group to speak, you know, and his plane going down in those hills and those are, that's true the way him and Pat both wanted to go. They even talked about it. But so I came back to the podium. And the weird thing about ego, you know, honestly, the weird thing about that ego, I'd have felt real crappy if I was sitting out in that audience where you guys are at and somebody came up and made the announcement. The weird deal about kind of I was able to tell my group that my sponsor had died. Yeah, you know, that's just, I mean, I felt blessed and honored, but that's a weird, weird thing there. But some things have happened this year. 16 years, that's a pretty big thing that happened in my sobriety, my sponsor dying. So I opened the floor up for people to speak a little bit about Mac. I just called on somebody. It was his boy Chris first. Then Chris left and went and told his other family. Chris also is a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, about 20 years sober. He came to Alcoholics Anonymous and told us first, and then went and told his family. His family is all in the program, very, you know, actively sober, or have been on a slip. But that's just the way, that's the way it goes. You know, you tell Alcoholics and then you tell the family. So that was a big thing. And something else has happened really big in this last year. You know, in the last little bit of, a couple weeks before I came up here, I got engaged. And I'm 38 years old. I've never been married. And, you talk about an Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm sure a lot of people who can marry and have happy lives, and those who don't, maybe render great service to Alcoholics. Well, you know, I go, you know, why am I married at 38 and having kids? Well, 2 weeks prior to this, I got engaged to a girl in Alcoholics Anonymous. And she's with child, you know. But I'm extremely grateful to be here. I get to go back, rush back after here, and not after I talk, but tomorrow sometime. and do some more of this wedding planning. And a very nice lady said I ought to say something about this Daily Reflections. And that's Sherry. She's back here in the back. She's a past delegate from Oklahoma. And some of the blessings in Alcoholics Anonymous are, I got an airplane and flew up here. I had no room to stay, and I'm bunking with two pretty ladies, but it's all legit, you know. You're not, there's no, but something about that is I took my fiance's Daily Reflection book, and I stuck this paper clip in it so I could read what I wanted to read, and I just stuck it anywhere in it, and I stuck it on a page. 361, the only page that she had written on, and it says, December 18th, in 1995, she had 10 months sober, and she said, I'm glad I'm here, and I'm not alone anymore. Kind of weird, I don't know how many pages there are, 384 and stick a paper clip, and the only page that she'd written on this morning. That's really about all I had to say. I just want to say one more thing so I can remember when I go back home that there are black squirrels here in Canada. That'll be on tape, and I'll remember to tell the people where I come from that there's black squirrels in Canada. I love you all, and I thank you for my life. And one more thing, though. Just one more thing. Being a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous is truly the greatest thing that's ever happened in my life. And it's given me the chance to have a fiance who will be my wife on August 6th. And have a child with her, and it gave me 16 years with a person who was my sponsor, and I knew his sponsor. I kind of hear people around here talk like that, you know, grand sponsors. It's a neat thing, you know. We know our sponsor, their sponsors. You can follow that back, way back to, you know, back to Akron, really, if you pay attention to it. And that night, the last person to speak that speaker meeting that Mac was going to talk was a gentleman named Benny. And when we came to the podium, I told him, I said, I'm going to need a new sponsor. I'd like to talk to you. And he said that. Come by and talk to me tomorrow, and he's been my sponsor since then. I love you all. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Kevin, for sharing your story. Our theme of the conference is I Am Responsible, and Kevin's an eligible bachelor up till right about now. He's going to learn about responsibility, being a father and being a husband. Our three speakers have talked about their sponsor. I'm going to talk about mine for about 2 minutes. My sponsor is C.C. from Prince Albert, Saskatchewan. And his sobriety date is January 14th, 1952. And Cease had the same sponsor for the first 51 years of his sobriety. And Elmer H. passed away 2 years ago. Tomorrow. And now I'm Cease's sponsor, so it's a real privilege. And he's not here today. I'm going to talk to him about that. But our three speakers this afternoon, Ann and Ryle, and Kevin have done a great job, and we should thank them again. And in the closing on page 553 of the big book on the story on freedom from bondage, the lady tells her story how she was set free, which I believe summarizes what freedom is in Alcoholics Anonymous. The only real freedom a human being can ever know is doing what you ought to do because you want to do it. And with that, would you please help me close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer for those who care to choose to join us? The Lord's Prayer.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation,